sites, one of the ideas is it allows you to kind of revisit material for multiple purposes over many years. And of course, I am reminded occasionally that we can also do that with books and articles. And frequently when I am doing this work, I am returning to either books or articles that Magdalene has written. So I'm delighted that you're here to join the conversation.
You know, I'm going to go over to the podium just because then you don't have to move. And I can look at everybody and you also. And have a table here. Put my things down on. As you know, perhaps the grandmother of multimedia presentations, I decided that I wasn't going to do a PowerPoint, but I was actually just going to handwrite my notes and talk for notes. And I want to stick to these notes because I could say a lot more than 10 minutes worth, and I know you probably have questions. I want to read something from a paper that Emily prepared for this symposium, and I think it restates much of what she said and gives a starting point for what I would like to say. Emily says, so in thinking back to my initial analysis of Hutchinson's website, the strategies I noticed were those that would be the most realistic for me, a novice teacher, to implement. Hutchinson's broader goals, for example, to teach students to think with the text, to promote social responsibility through the teaching of literate discourse, and so on, were too big, too overwhelming, and too complex for me to internalize as a student teacher. I could certainly appreciate and marvel at them, but I could not internalize them. I was too preoccupied with my lesson plans for the next day. I could not think long term because I was inexperienced and needed to concentrate on planning each day, one day at a time. So that has been presented in some ways as a developmental stage. And I would like to argue that it may be a developmental stage, but that there are things that we could use multimedia representations to show about teaching that take us away from the one day at a time way of thinking about what teaching is. In a lot of Pam's work, she has talked about uncovering what the work of teaching is. And as those of you who are teacher educators know, people like this arrive in our classrooms not really having a clue what they're getting themselves into. And one of the things that we want to teach them is how complex the work is. And what they wind up coming away from that is understanding how hard it is and how I couldn't possibly do that. I think that across these four generations, if you will, of work, from Yvonne to Pam to Emily and Travis, what we see is an uncovering of the complexity. Pam and Tom say that one of the assumptions that they begin with is teaching is a complex, situated, and ill-defined activity. And I think that part of what we've seen here, part of what's been exposed to us through this analysis of what Emily and Travis learned in Pam's class and what they didn't learn and what they're doing and struggling with it in their own classrooms, is confronting that ill-defined piece of teaching and making it more defined. These things that Yvonne Hutchinson did from day one, the anticipation guide, the stop responses, the strategies that she used for calling on students, and even choosing texts, are something that teachers do every day across the year. And they do them to accomplish the big pieces of the work, the purpose, the vision. And I think the challenge, the way I would answer your question, Tom, is that what we ought to try to put up on the websites is the connection between the purpose and vision and these everyday routines that Yvonne engages in order to promote literate discourse. And in order to do something that I've become willing to call covering the curriculum. Those are two things that take the teacher to work on every single day through every class with every student. And when we only see one lesson, that piece of the work is often called invisible. But it's not invisible in the sense that these are actions you can't see. These are actions that you can't interpret as something the teacher has to work on every day and every minute in relation to content and students. And I think there are aspects of teaching that will remain ill-defined and complex. We will not make dilemmas go away. But I think that if we can represent the routines that teachers use to implement their purposes and their visions, we will have added to the representations. Because the professional values, the things that Yvonne believes in, are embedded in these seemingly trite routines. And I think making that connection would be a very valuable thing to do. One of the things that has been interesting to me is how other professions have worked at surfacing the importance of seemingly trite things. I mean, Travis, you mentioned, or I guess it was Emily who mentioned learning students' names. In the dental school, they teach beginning dentists that the very first thing they should do is to ask their patients what their name is. And furthermore, to use the name constantly when they refer to the patient. And they rehearse that. It's part of respecting your client, just as learning your students' names and using them in the classroom is part of respecting your students. It's part of making it a more student-centered classroom. It seems like a trite thing, but it's a strategic thing. It's not only a classroom management tool, which is often how it gets labeled in teacher education. The thing that both Travis and Emily talked about in Yvonne's classroom, where she uses a class scribe. You really should see this on the website because it's quite impressive. A student stands up at the beginning of the lesson and talks about what happened the day before. So there's a collective memory being built up. And, you know, was it that you were referring to, Emily? Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, that really takes a long time. And when you watch it on the web, you see, oh, you know, this is, like, really tedious. This girl's going on about, you know, who wasn't there and whose friend was sick and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But what that routine, if you will, means is that what happened yesterday is important. And that we are a classroom community because we shared what happened yesterday. And you don't necessarily see it in those terms unless you connect Yvonne's values and professional ambitions and intent with these kinds of routines. Those are things that are very different from planning the lessons that you're going to teach that day. They contribute as much to not only building up a literate discussion or a classroom culture, as some of us call it, but also enabling the students to connect with the subject matter that you want them to learn, whether it's Othello or mathematics, in my case. Because once you for example, learn students' names, you can draw somebody into the discussion at exactly the point where he or she needs to learn the thing that you want to teach. So these kinds of things that have existed in separate categories don't need to. So what else is in my notes? I have a whole page on things to do next and what my imagination ran away with while I was looking at this. And from that whole page, I want to take my last minute to talk about how the work of the teacher educator in using these kinds of materials is far from trivial. And Pam, in what she wrote, and Tom, in what he wrote, talk a lot about, and they did today in the session, about documenting the learning of beginning teachers. And even before that, documenting the work of teaching. But I think documenting the work of the teacher educator in making these materials meaningful to students is equally as important. And teacher educators don't have communities of practice. I mean, I love my opportunities to talk with Pam, who's been in this conversation on multimedia representations from the beginning. She came to a session at the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics in Seattle, and I thought, what is she doing here? She's not a math educator. So one place I think I would like to, one thing I would add to this page is much more on the learning and practice of the teacher educator in using these materials. I think I'll stop there because that'll give us some good time for discussion, and maybe Pam or Tom, if you want to come up here and lead the discussion.
Sure. And why don't you join the group over there?
So just picking up on that a little bit, I neglected to mention at the start, you'll notice in your programs that Krista Compton was supposed to join us. Krista was teaching and designed the course that's documented in that website with Pam, right? That was that.
And I guess the thing I'd like to say about that, and what Krista would have talked about, is, again, what it means to learn to be a teacher educator. So in Stanford, one of the things I do is co-teach my classes with my doctoral students. Each time I take on a new doctoral student, we do something new. So this was Krista's first year in teaching with me, and that was one of the motivations, actually, for attempting this project, because, again, teacher educators, novice teacher educators, need to see the work from the beginning and how you kind of think about the materials and how you design assignments. This year, I have a new student I'm working with, and we designed a humanities curriculum, bringing the social studies and English classes together. But again, her own learning, the documenting of the learning of novice teacher educators, I think, is equally important, and we have very few records of that kind of work. We often think because somebody's been a teacher, they're immediately qualified to be a teacher educator, and yet those of us who have made that transition know it's very different teaching middle school or high school students from teaching adults who are learning to teach. It's really not the same work in many ways. And so providing more resources for those people who are learning to do this kind of work, and who are often under-supported. Here in New York, we have many, many doctoral students teaching adjunct classes all over the city, sometimes in multiple universities, without necessarily the opportunity to look carefully at the work of teacher education, what it takes to do it, and to get the kind of mentoring and support we hope for new teachers as well.
And we should add that there is some documentation of teacher educators trying to use the site and the inside teaching website, which is part of the Quest part of project with the Carnegie Foundation. But before we open it up, I want to pick up on this the question, the challenge, I think, that you raised for us in terms about now how do we make visible that connection between purpose and routines and everyday practice? Because as you say, it's there, it's embedded. And we've made design choices in these. And in some senses, I think the sites you see here reflect a desire to get at some of the more technical aspects, make sure we get at some of the practices and the everyday routines that we want to get. Because in the initial websites that we developed with some of the master teachers, they were really more focused on their inquiries, the broader purposes, and we were losing sight of those everyday practices. So we're having this one micro and macro problem. So I don't know if any of the panelists or Magdalene, perhaps you have some idea. How do we represent that connection? Pam has an answer.
No, I don't have an answer. But again, if we think about future work, it's new work, would be to do kind of more annotation of these sites. So there are new tools for tagging these sites, and there's Roy P's Diver, which would allow people, in essence, to do some of that connecting. sort of looking at some of those practices and then connect them through that kind of annotation. So this is the long-term purpose. This is where it's headed. This is the kind of work that you could then, again, would make it accessible for other people to look at those sites. So you want to see how she does that. Here are some different places to look. So I think some of the new annotation tools for digital media might be one of the ways.
Well, I think that part of the problem is in the fundamental way that teacher education is structured, rather than in what you can and can't represent in multimedia. I can't remember which of you said, but the pedagogy of teaching new teachers how to run a discussion and, you know, five strategies for running a good discussion, and then sending them out to do it once in a classroom where discussions don't happen on a regular basis is very not like what happens in Yvonne Hutchison's class. So they're not learning how to do what Yvonne does by going out and trying something once in a classroom where that doesn't happen. So I think together with trying to represent it on the web, we need to think about how to structure work in teacher education so that there is a cycle of learning, going out, trying it, seeing what happens, so that you see teaching as something that is indeed repetitive, that it's not about if throwing the pieces of throwing the paper balls into the circle didn't work the way you wanted it to, tomorrow you try something else, and if that doesn't work tomorrow you try something else, and then, you know, look, and now you can look on the web and get 8 million strategies for how to decide who to call on, and you can try a different one every day. But what we know about participation and communication is that it's learning the repetitive ways of interacting with people that allow us to work on the hard stuff, like the big ideas that we want to pick up on. And so some way of adding something to the web, but also using it in a different way in relation to what people get to try, I think is important.
And some of that trying can actually happen in the teacher education classroom. So tomorrow, just to put in a plug for Magdalene's session, tomorrow there's going to be a session on the use of rehearsals in teacher education. And in a sense, what you saw Emily doing is a form of rehearsal, right? She's trying something out. It's an opportunity to try to lead a small group discussion. One of the things that I've realized, now having done this for a couple of years, is that what's missing there is feedback on that effort. Mm-hmm. So I actually get immediate, you know, access to how my students are doing this. And I just did it again this fall, and I realized, you know, some of them, we talk about not asking leading questions, we talk about open-ended questions, and the first question they'll ask is a leading question. And that's the moment, actually, to say, you know, let's talk about that. Let's try it again. How else might you ask it? Okay, now do it. So to go in and out of role, in essence, in the teacher education course, so they have opportunities within teacher education, not only out in the coursework as well as in the field, to do that kind of work.
But Tom, your point about bouncing back and forth between sort of looking at the larger purpose and reflecting on intentions and so on, and moving from that to really wanting to look at the strategies that she uses, I think in all of our aspects, all aspects of our work as teacher educators, we don't want to see those as two separate things. And I think we sort of bounced back from competency-based teacher education, which did focus on do this, do this, do this, to reflection. And seeing those as two separate things is really does not lead to thoughtful practice or competent practice. You need to have both somehow.
And I think part of the challenge for me in thinking about representing, what are the forms and format? What are the genres that allow us to represent those things together instead of the class anatomy, which essentially is focused on the micro, and the inquiries which we've done, which focus on the larger, broader inquiry. But I think we have almost 20.